Good evening. I'm your host, Aaron Ripmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight to record Diz Dad's podcast number 73 are Nathan Trent.
Hello, everybody.
And Philip Holt.
Howdy, guys.
Now, tonight, we're going to be talking for the first time about the other side of Orlando. We're going to be discussing Universal Studios Florida and Islands of Adventure, the theme parks that are sometimes referred to as the dark side among the Diz Dads. But before we get to that discussion, I do want to thank again our podcast sponsor, Fairy Tale Journey, an authorized Disney travel planner. Although Fairy Tale Journeys as an agency specializes in Disney travel, a number of the Fairy Tale Journeys agents also are trained in booking Universal vacations and would love to help you with either a Disney or a Universal vacation or both. Tonight, we're going to wander off property and head over to the Universal Resort and this is actually, there's a lot there to talk about. So I think that this being our first foray into that area, we're going to kind of take an overview. And one of the things I think we have to mention right up front is that there's a lot going on at Universal Orlando and Islands of Adventure right now. And so what these parks are now and what they're becoming is very different than what they were, really just 4 years ago. But before we start talking about specifics, I do want to get an overview. So let's talk generally about Universal Resorts. Philip, if you had to describe the Universal Studios theme park, what would you say its overarching theme is?
Of course, the main emphasis are on the movies and behind the scenes. But to me, it's kind of more adult and more mature, but with kid stuff sprinkled in.
Yeah, I mean, I think I could agree with that. I mean, the bigger theme is movies, and because Universal's movie catalog is maybe not quite so kid and family focused, the attractions do tend to be more, PG rated, right. For lack of a better way to put it, because that's what the films were too.
Looking up the ride heights and I would probably have to wait another year or two before taking my daughter so she could ride on a lot of the rides.
Yeah. And I do want to talk about that in some more detail in a minute. But like I said, let's see if we can get the overview first. So we've got the movie-themed park in the Universal Studios park. And then, Nate, how would you describe the theme of Islands of Adventure?
A jigsaw puzzle?
That's actually a really good way to put it.
I agree with that, yeah.
Because the note that I made was that it's sort of a collection of adventure-focused lands. And each of the lands really stands on its own. I'm not sure that there's much that connects it other than, to a greater or lesser extent, this concept of adventure.
I found it an easy park to navigate the way it was laid out, except unless you were in one side and you needed to get the other side. There's no clear connection that way. It's kind of like a World Showcase in that aspect.
Right. But the fact that each of the islands is pretty clearly defined makes it relatively easy to get yourself located in the park and move from place to place. That's true. And in addition to the theme parks, the resort includes the City Walk area, which is Universal's version of Downtown Disney, but it's really probably more similar to what people think of about, when they think of Downtown Disney in Anaheim at Disneyland, as opposed to Downtown Disney in Orlando, because you've got the two parks and then the City Walk area is really kind of right there along the way, right in front of the theme parks. And you sort of have to pass through it as you're going to the parks. And then there's also three on-property resort hotels. They're all run by the Loews Hotel Company, very well-run hotels. Have either of you stayed at one of the Universal hotels?
I did. Actually, around the same time you were there in 2010, I stayed at the Royal Pacific.
Oh, okay.
Very beautiful resort.
So you stayed at Royal Pacific. We stayed at Hard Rock Hotel. And I think that one of the things about the Universal hotels is that although they still kind of, divide them into I don't know how to put it. They do kind of try to categorize them similar to the way that, that Disney does. I think that there's less difference between the hotels than there is difference between the Disney, you know, deluxe, moderate, and value category hotels. In my estimation, I would say that, that the Universal hotels really all would qualify as something between a higher-end, moderate hotel at Disney and a deluxe hotel.
Yeah, yeah. And with the one you kind of held back on mentioning, the Cabana Bay, and from, that's going to be out in 2014, that's supposed to be a value. And so, that yeah, they have the three deluxe, and then the new one's supposed to be a value.
Right. And they're marketing it right now as a value, but it's going to be primarily comprised of family suites similar to Art of Animation. And so I still expect the pricing on it to be a little bit higher than you might see at your regular Disney value resort, although there will be some standard rooms as well.
Have you actually seen the Royal Pacific, Aaron?
Just kind of in passing. We kind of passed through a little bit.
My trip to Disney just a couple weeks ago was the first time I went to the Polynesian. And in the back corner, there's that staircase. That exact same staircase is at the Royal Pacific. It is, I mean, it just kind of shocked me how similar those two hotels were.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, to Universal's credit, they do a really nice job with those hotels, with carrying out the themes of the hotels. Portofino Bay has a sort of a Southern Italian feel. Hard Rock Hotel, you know, has the rock and roll memorabilia all over the place and really loud music playing everywhere, which was kind of cool sometimes and kind of was overwhelming a little bit in the lobby sometimes. It was hard to talk to my kids. And then at the Royal Pacific, you've got that same sort of Pacific Polynesian feel that you get at the Polynesian in Disney World.
Mm-hmm. And they also have the luau's just the same.
Right, right. And I want to talk, too, about, as long as we're on the resort hotels. Well, Philip, you've stayed at the resort hotel before. Why did you choose to stay on property at Universal?
I enjoyed the close proximity to the parks. You know, it was kind of also a decision because of the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, because got in the hour early.
Okay.
Which was an awesome perk. I mean, we don't even know if we would have been able to do half as much as we did without that perk.
Right, right.
Plus, also had the free express pass with the package.
Okay, so that I think is really the important thing to mention. One of the things about the Universal hotels is that the perks for staying on property at Universal are really fantastic, because you get an early entry to Islands of Adventure, specifically to the Wizarding World, and that early entry in a lot of ways is even more valuable than, you know, Disney World's Extra Magic Hours, because Extra Magic Hours are open to people who are staying at, you know, what's the total number of hotels on Disney property now? Something like 25 hotels. Whereas at Universal, there are only three hotels.
Yeah.
So you're competing for that early entry space with far fewer guests. And then the other thing is that, as you mentioned, Express Pass. And why don't you go ahead and explain what Express Pass is?
On certain rides throughout both Universal and Islands of Adventure, they have, you know, what is pretty much, you know, Disney's Fast Pass, but you don't have to get separate tickets per. You get one fast ride on each of the rides per day, is how I remember it.
Well, here's the thing. That's the way it works if you purchase an Express Pass. And there are two big differences, really, that I think we need to mention. Universal, their system for sort of advanced ride reservation, instead of using the FastPass system that Disney uses, is called ExpressPass. And if you don't stay on property, you can purchase an ExpressPass. There are no free ExpressPasses at Universal, unlike FastPass. If you purchase Express Pass, you can use it once per attraction that takes Express Pass. And most of the major attractions do. The exclusions are things like, you know, the very newest rides. So, you know, Forbidden Journey in Wizarding World doesn't take it. I think Rip Ride Rocket still doesn't take it. But
no, they just started.
Oh, they did just start finally.
They
okay.
just started this week.
Oh, well, thanks for the update. So Rip Ride Rocket now does take Express Pass. It gets you into that separate line. The other way to get Express Pass, other than purchasing it, is to stay on property. If you stay on property at one of the resorts of Universal, your Express Pass is an unlimited Express Pass.
Okay. See, I couldn't remember that being back in 2010.
But. Yeah, and that may have been an update. But right around that time is I think, when they changed it and added that benefit. And what that means is that you can go back and get in the same ride line again and again and go straight to the front of the line. And that is a fabulous benefit, especially during busier times of the year. But, you know, even when it's not at its peak times, that Express Pass allows you to really sort of experience everything you want to experience very expeditiously.
Mm-hmm. And, I thought going into this podcast, I might lose my Diz Dad's card because, you know, I actually Universal is, you know, my first love. I rediscovered Disney after my daughter was born. But in my personal opinion, I like the Express Pass a lot better than the Fast Pass for the reason why you don't have to jump all over to different rides to get a pass to get on. You just go at your leisure.
Right, right. Yeah, there's no chasing down a new ticket each time.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the things that we do particularly like about the different parks, and maybe in that way kind of get a chance to describe a little bit of the experience. So, Nate, why don't you go ahead and give us one of your top three things that you liked about the Islands of Adventure Park, because I know you spent more time there.
Of course, it's going to be Wizarding World of Harry Potter. They hit a home run with this addition to that park. I haven't seen it before. I haven't been in the park before they added it, but, I mean, as far as theming and the major attraction there, the Forbidden Journey, there's just nothing else like it that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I have to agree. How about you, Philip? What's one of your favorite things about Islands of Adventure?
You know, of course, you know, if you're starting with the top, you know, it's also Wizarding World of Harry Potter. That's, you know, the main reason we went in 2010 and again in 2012. But, I mean, they're just... It's something about it. I was never a big fan of the books, but I love the movies. And then just, you know, walking in there and you feel like you're in the movie and feeling.
The Forbidden Journey ride itself is the top of my list at Islands of Adventure. And it goes to the top of the list because, you know, similar to the things that you've been saying, it's simply unlike any attraction I've ever experienced. It's a unique ride system, and it is like a combination of all of the best parts of some of my favorite attractions. You know, you get the sort of the 3D flight sensation that you get at Soarin' at Disney, but it's more intense, and you get that sort of intensity that you might get from a roller coaster, like a Rock and Roller Coaster or something like that. But you get the visual detail and storytelling of a dark ride. And it just blew me away.
And kind of still on that topic, Butterbeer blows the Flu Brew out of the water.
Yeah, I actually listed that separately on my list.
Sorry, I don't mean to jump.
No, it's okay, because I'm going to mention something else. So you know, Butterbeer belongs on the list. I'll go ahead and mention the next thing on my list, which was Butterbeer and specifically the Hogshead Tavern. And the thing about the Hogshead Tavern is that it's not even on the map. It's not on the park map, okay? It is simply one end of the Three Broomsticks restaurant, which is a counter service restaurant. But at the end of it, they have the Hogshead Tavern with the, you know, talking Hogshead animatronic in the wall. It's normally a bar. It serves adult beverages. But what they don't advertise is that you can go up to the Hogshead, to the bar, and order butterbeer. And they've got both the regular butterbeer and frozen butterbeer. And the line is always about a tenth of the line at the butterbeer cart in the middle of the road.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Aaron, because, I mean, that's, you know, a good little hidden gem right there.
Yeah, it's amazing, because you can stand in the sun and wait for the cart, or you can bypass that line, and it's like an express pass to butterbeer by going to the line in the Hogshead Tavern.
And the Hogshead beer is also very good, if you like kind of your darker type beer.
Good to know. Good to know. See, I was there for a purpose, so I got the butter beer. But it's good to know that the Hogshead branded beer is good. I think that's just sort of, you know, part of what we've been saying so far about the Wizarding World of Harry Potter is that they've gone to great length to make every element of the experience immersive, including, you know, creating special beverages. All right, so Nate, what was another thing that you really enjoyed about Islands of Adventure?
Islands of Adventure. I'd say, you know, I only get three.
We'll see if you got more, but okay. You know.
I don't know. It's the little train in the Seuss Landing, actually, believe it or not.
Okay.
I called it the TTA of Seuss Land.
There's nothing wrong with that at all. It is a nice little attraction.
It was kind of a grand tour of the Seuss stuff and had a little story to go along with it, so I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's called the High in the Sky Seuss Trolley Train Ride.
That's it.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a really good point, though, to mention Seuss Landing, because the theming and detail in Seuss Landing is almost as immersive as the Wizarding World is, which is sort of the next land just past Seuss Landing. And I've actually heard, you know, stories about how it was seeing what they'd done at Universal with Seuss Landing that sold J.K. Rowling on having Universal do Wizarding World of Harry Potter, because she was so impressed with how they'd stayed true to the imagery and feel of Dr. Seuss when they did Seuss Landing.
I remember when I rode the Cat in the Hat ride, I told the person as I was getting off, I said, Dr. Seuss would be proud.
Big props for Seuss Landing from Nate, and in particular the High in the Sky train, and Cat in the Hat too, to some extent. Philip, what's another thing on your, you know, high on your list at Islands of Adventure?
The whole Marvel superhero island. Mainly Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man.
What is this, Philip? You steal everything on my list. You did this to me again. All right, go ahead. Talk about Spider-Man.
Well, technically Nathan stole my Wizarding World, but I can't blame him on that one. But, you know, the Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man is always one of my have-to-do rides. It's just, you know, it's along the same lines as your, 3D kind of, you know, you're immersed in the action, you know, and everyone loves Spider-Man. So,
all right.
But that whole land is very, you know, well done. They have Captain America Diner and Cafe 4 and just, you know, some really cool rides and just, you know, attractions that, you know, are one of a kind.
This is true. Now, I do think we need to mention that one of the drawbacks at Islands of Adventure, is that a lot of its best attractions, Seuss Landing aside, are high-intensity attractions with, you know, height requirements of at least 54 inches. I know that that's the height requirement on Dragon Challenge and Hulk. I think that it's a little bit shorter. I think it's 52 inches on Forbidden Journey, and Spider-Man may actually be 48. I don't remember for sure.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I noticed, I think 48 was pretty much the beginning of most stuff, you know, outside of your Seuss Landing and Toon Lagoon.
Right. And so you have to be prepared for that. And I have to say that that was one of the things that we were not as prepared for as we should have been. We had measured my daughter at home and thought she was 54 inches. Turned out she was about 53 3/4 inches. It led to some unpleasant scenes at Dragon Challenge and Hulk, both of which she really wanted to ride. You really do need to be aware of that when you decide that you're going to go to Islands of Adventure, and that is that you really probably do want to save it for when your kids are a little taller, or take them when they're really young and don't want to ride those intense attractions and can enjoy instead the things in Seuss Landing, the things at Toon Lagoon that they may not enjoy as much when they're older. I don't know. Nate, what do you think? Was that a fair assessment?
Yeah. My son isn't too much into thrill rides, so we missed some of the coasters. But we did do the Spider-Man, and I believe the height limit on that is 40 inches.
Okay.
And on Spider-Man, you know, to me, that was a Spider-Man out of a comic strip instead of the one in the comic book I was familiar with. You know, kind of like the Sunday paper version of Spider-Man, the storyline in that one. Yeah. I'm an old comic book guy.
Right. Okay. I can see that. And, you know, I do like what they do with the superhero meet and greets in that area on the Marvel Superhero Island. They get Captain America out there. They get Spider-Man out there. And they do a really good job of engaging the kids and, you know, being approachable.
Aaron, do we know how long this relationship with Universal is going to last with Marvel?
I was wondering the same thing about how much Universal has to pay Disney or how that contract works.
Well, I mean, there is a royalty that they have to pay for use of the Marvel characters. And as I understand it, it's basically a portion of ticket sales. It's just a percentage off the top of ticket sales at Islands of Adventure plus some percentage of merchandise sales and things inside the park. And I'm sure that Universal hates sending that check to Disney. But as I understand it, the way that it was structured, you know, back in the day, Marvel was not the best run business. And when they negotiated this licensing agreement with Universal, it basically has automatic rollover provisions that as long as Universal makes its payments on time, they get to keep using the characters they're using. And as long as they're using the characters they're using, then they can't be used by anybody else. I believe the rule is east of the Mississippi. So theoretically, if Disney really wanted to, they could introduce some of these characters in Disneyland. I think that they're reluctant to do it because if they did, they end up inadvertently marketing for Universal.
Yeah.
It's an unfortunate situation.
Yeah. Right. With the purchase of Star Wars and its popularity, I don't see Disney spending a lot of money on Marvel until they maximize their potential with Star Wars.
I don't disagree. And I think that Disney is going to look to capitalize on Marvel in other markets. I think we're already hearing some word that Marvel may show up in Hong Kong. I think that was the most recent rumor that would show up in Hong Kong first. I wouldn't be surprised if it showed up in Shanghai and or Tokyo not long after.
I remember reading about that they actually announced that what was it, Iron Man ride was going to be in Hong Kong.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is that Disney didn't denounce it. No, it was a government official of the whatever the official entity of Hong Kong is these days, because it's like a protectorate now or something. And it was like in his, you know, the equivalent of the State of the Union speech, where he addressed this ongoing relationship with Disney and whether he was talking before anything was finalized or whether he just opened his mouth before he was supposed to is unclear at this point. But I would not at all be surprised if we got an Iron Man attraction in Hong Kong. All right, so that's Islands of Adventure. Now, as we kind of transition from talking a little bit about Islands of Adventure to talking some more about Universal Studios, I do want to mention what I feel like is sort of one of the shortcomings of Universal. And that is that I think they do a really nice job of creating these immersive lands. And they do a really nice job with the high-intensity attractions. One of the things I think they fall down on is I was not impressed with the food at Universal. I felt like it was sort of one end or the other. It was either the worst, lowest common denominator theme park food, or it was really, really high-end fine dining. It was it was theme park grill or Emeralds, and nothing in between.
I would agree with you on that, Aaron. I've had Emeralds. I've had I'm trying to think of some of the other restaurants I've eaten at, and I've also had a fried peanut butter and jelly sandwich, which was also good. But there's really no in between as far as the counter service goes. It's just like you said, high end and low end.
And the Wizarding World, to some extent, is an exception. At least they've got some unique food at Three Broomsticks, although, we tried some of the unique food, and I wasn't really that impressed. I liked that it was different, but I wasn't that impressed.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was kind of unusual. When we first visited, we had a breakfast there, which I looked the other day. It doesn't look like they serve breakfast anymore there.
They still have the breakfast, but it's a more standard menu because they still do the special. There are special packages that include a breakfast at the Three Broomsticks. I don't think they open for breakfast except for people who are there on the Wizarding World package.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I had their blood sausage. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, and that they've taken off the menu.
Okay.
Yeah. Islands of Adventure, now we move over to Universal, more of a movie theme.
Can I add one thing, Aaron?
Oh, yeah, sure. Please do.
The Mystic Talking Fountain in the Lost Continent.
Ah, yes.
I think it's wonderful. I don't really know why. But I wanted to point out about it because it's, to me, another thing that I have to always go check out every time I go.
Well, so talk about that fountain a little bit.
It's a kind of, what would you say, like a Greek style fountain that, will actually talk to you and spit water at you, to guests who aren't aware. And it will actually, I guess it's similar to Push at Disney, where it will interact with you. And pretty much like talk to kids and be specific about their clothes. It's just kind of really neat to just sit down and watch people interact with the fountain.
Okay. Yeah. That Push was exactly what popped into my mind first as well, as soon as you started describing it. So that
obviously more stationary.
But. Well, yeah, it doesn't move around, but Push doesn't spit. So. Which is probably best since it's a trash can.
Yeah.
All right. So again, let's go ahead and move over to Universal and talk about some of the things at Universal. Universal right now is the park that's sort of in the most flux. Islands of Adventure got its big changes with the introduction of the Wizarding World. Right now, there's a lot of construction going on the Universal side. They're getting ready to open the Transformers ride this summer, and they also are at least heavily rumored. I don't think it's even official yet, but it's heavily rumored that they are building an expansion of the Wizarding World on the Universal side, as well as some means of connecting the two. But that's all under construction. There are, however, still some nice attractions that are still there. So why don't we talk about some of the things that we've checked out that we've enjoyed the most? You know, Nate, I know you didn't spend a ton of time on the Universal side. What was something that you did like about it?
I did like the Men in Black attraction.
All right, so talk a little bit about what Men in Black is.
Relating it to Disney, it most reminds me of Buzz Lightyear.
Okay.
Except you're going through and you're shooting aliens, and you have a little bit more control of the gun as far as that. You don't manually spin your car, though. That your gun is on a cable, and you kind of shoot it. Kind of like the Disneyland version of Buzz Lightyear.
Okay.
And I had a pretty good story.
Yeah. All right. And, Philip, what about you? What's one of the things that you enjoy on the Universal side?
Well, again, Nate stole my main one. And that's mainly because my friend Jody, who always goes to Universal with me, I can never beat her at that game.
Okay.
Or at Men in Black, and it's so frustrating. So that's kind of one of my holy grails. Also, Hollywood Rip Ride Rocket. That's one that eluded me for a long time, actually. The first, three or four times, it was actually closed the day I was there. And, you know, I always wanted to ride it. I thought it was the neatest thing. But then finally, this past trip in last January, I finally got to ride it. And I played Beastie Boys' Sabotage.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it was one that sort of defeated me because every time we tried to ride it when we were there, it was down. I think that its uptime record has improved somewhat over the last year and a half or so. But for a while, they really had some problems keeping it running.
And I did notice that with the Universal and Islands of Adventure as total, y'all would probably know more about Disney closures because the past couple of trips I've taken, I don't believe any rides on while I was there had closed. But Universal and Islands of Adventure, I noticed a lot of times a lot of their rides were down.
Yeah, I think that both, you know, everybody has issues with rides going down. Some rides just have more problems than others. And Disney has had issues with Splash Mountain for a while, although they had a major refurb there. So hopefully we won't have as many of those. Lately they've been having some issues at Tower of Terror with one of the elevators that's gone down quite a bit. I think it's just a matter of, you know, there's a natural cycle to these things and some of its design. Sometimes it just takes a while to get a better handle on things that they need to tweak in order to deal with the maintenance. It got really bad there for Rip Ride Rocket for a while. But
and even the time that I did get to ride it, when we got on, the ride broke or went down. And so we stood, sat there in the seats for 20 minutes.
Oh, wow. Waiting
to take off. We had to actually get it back out. And then wait another 10 minutes and get back on, and then it finally worked. So, that ride has not been without issues for me, but I loved it.
Yeah, what I keep hearing is that it's a great ride once you get a chance to actually ride it.
And the great thing about it is you get to, of course it's a limited selection, but you get to pick your soundtrack for the entire ride.
Sure.
There was Beastie Boys Sabotage. I think there was some No Doubt. Really kind of one or two songs from all different genres,
right?
That you just pick from, and that's just one of the neat things about it. It's your soundtrack, and it's individual to yours, and
right. And it makes each time you ride it a little bit different and unique.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite things, and I may get made fun about this one because this attraction gets a lot of criticism, but we really enjoyed E.T. the Ride. I know that it's dated. I know that it's old. I know that parts of the ride are downright silly. There's this story of, returning an E.T. home to its home planet and you, you know, finish having a party with ETs. It's just kind of goofy. And yeah, the, you know, cars and things that, that are trying to stop you on your journey to return the ET home are a little cheesy. But having grown up with ET and, you know, my first date ever was to go and see ET. So the having that personal history, you know, that moment where you're riding that bicycle and it takes off and you fly past the moon, you know, that's movie magic.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's a classic. I mean, I wouldn't at least make fun of you for it. I don't know about Nathan. But that's kind of how I felt. Like I was talking earlier before we started recording about Jaws and King Kong. To me, those were classic rides I rode when I lived there.
Yeah.
It's sad to see him go, but at the same time, you kind of understand, you know, that they are dated. But with ET, at least, you know, that's one of the nice staples that are still there.
Right. Right. And it's always fun to hear, you know, ET say your name as you exit.
Yeah.
However badly it gets mangled. All right. So, Nate, back around to you. What's another thing you enjoyed about Universal? We having a hard time now?
Having a hard time. Well, I didn't spend a lot of time in the park other than walking around it. I would have – I know in my heart I would have loved the Despicable Me attraction, but the line was just too long at that point.
Yeah, it had just opened.
I did not have an express pass. Yeah.
Yeah, right. I was actually going to ask you about that because I have yet to be there when it's been opened. So I was wondering if you had ridden it.
I wished I had.
Yeah, I mean, my kids were big Jimmy Neutron fans, and so that we rode it, you know, before it was changed over. We rode it when it was Jimmy Neutron. And the reports that I've heard are that basically the part that was the Jimmy Neutron theater is almost unchanged except for a new movie, but that they've really built onto it and kind of tacked onto it the rest of a full story. And they've introduced a lot more detailed theming and, you know, really make you feel like you're there at Gru's house. And so assuming that, you know, I mean, the ride is a little jerky. Okay. That's the way that those kind of 4D video attractions work. But with the extra theming, I'm excited to see it myself. One of the other things that I liked about Universal, and this is just a little thing, and I hope that it stays because it's one of the things that I'd heard, you know, might end up getting moved out to make room for some of the expansions of the Wizarding World or for Transformers. And that is that we had a terrific time with the Shrek and Donkey meet and greet. Hmm. You know, they do such a nice job of really engaging each child uniquely. And it's funny and lighthearted and a little, you know, just a little snarky, just like Shrek is. It was probably, you know, aside from the Wizarding World, the highlight of my daughter's day was, you know, kind of messing around with Shrek and Donkey. And it's one of those things, it's just kind of a little thing, but it's really well done. And the kids liked it a lot.
And that, you know, Shrek 4D is, to me, also a really great ride. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Shrek series. But, you know, just, you know, feeling like you're right there in the ride is really unique also.
Yep, I agree. All right, so anything else that we want to mention as a real kind of must-do about Universal Studios side of the park? A couple of attractions that I know a lot of people really enjoy. I didn't get a chance to do them when we were there, mostly because the kids were kind of worn out from the Islands of Adventure side. And that was The Simpsons. And I think that they're doing some really nice things with the area around the Simpsons. They're taking a cue from the kudos that they're getting for the detailed work that they did in the Wizarding World, and taking some of the, you know, fairly nondescript, not so well themed storefront areas around the Simpsons ride and making it that little area feel like kind of a mini Springfield.
And one of the only places you can go to the Quickie Mart.
That's right. You can go to the Quickie Mart, and it, although I don't think they've announced anything, it does appear that one of those restaurant storefronts is going to become Krusty Burger.
Oh, wow. That would be neat.
Yeah. Anything else that we want to make sure? Oh, The Mummy is the other ride that's, you know, really well known. The park is really well known for. We didn't ride it because my daughter was too spooked for it. It really is probably more for a teenager or on up. I don't know. Philip, have you ridden Mummy?
Yes, I have. It's actually probably one of my top three at Universal. I'm trying to remember what it – I mean, we always have to go back to Disney to
try to find a comparison, yeah.
Yeah. As far as roller coasters go, of course, the theming's different, but Space Mountain, you know, you're you know, zipping in and out of tunnels, going through big balls of fire. Better keep that fire part in. I don't want. they did a really good job. I was actually living in Orlando, going to school at the time, when they did away with the King Kong ride, and I was upset about it. And then whenever they opened that up, I went and rode it, and I was pleasantly surprised. It was a really fun ride.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they did a nice job. To me, it almost is a more adult version of what Disney seems to be trying to do with the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, which is to combine elements of a dark ride and a roller coaster. Because there's definitely some story there in the Mummy ride, but it's also a more intense roller coaster as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not Rip Ride Rocket intense, but there's some thrill factor.
And the queue is really well done as well. You know, you really feel like you're going through a Egyptian tomb. You know, I mean, like, you know, they you know, usually a lot of these queues are really well done and themed really well, but that one definitely gets you in the mood to ride.
Yeah, and you know, I guess that leads to my one other sort of criticism of Universal. I think they've done a really wonderful job of theming individual attractions and individual lands or areas of the park, but the designs never feel very cohesive. It sort of goes back a little bit to what Nate was saying about Islands of Adventure feeling like a jigsaw puzzle. And that sort of makes sense for Islands of Adventure, but on the Universal Studios side is where I think it's the most glaring. I mean, I understand that the idea is supposed to be that you're kind of walking through different kinds of movie sets, but I just don't think it comes through very well.
I agree with that. Where Disney has a good job of, you know, transitioning from land to land, Universal really does lack, because, I mean, there's no real transition. You're there, you know, kind of hard to explain, but it's like you're in, I can't remember the layout right now, you know, one part you're in Simpsons and then next you're, you know, in an alien world in Men in Black. And so there's no real transition there.
I don't know. Nate, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. I did like the street sets there. You know, to me, they seem pretty realistic. I liked them a little bit better than Streets of America at Studios, the buildings and stuff.
Well, that's true. I think that the sets themselves are really nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we went through it, that park, at a pretty good clip. So it didn't take a lot of time to take in everything. So,
right. I mean, I guess to me, the real challenge is what Philip was talking about. And that is that although there are individual elements, again, that, you know, that the street scenes themselves are very well themed. They just don't lend themselves well to a particular flow through the park. And to a certain extent, I think it makes the parks, as you were saying, Nate, in some ways makes them a little bit more difficult to navigate on sort of a global sense from one end to the other. You know, getting from point A to point B relatively near each other, just adjacent to each other, is easy because you can see the transition. You can see the differences clearly. But to get all the way around or all the way through from one side of the park to another side of the park, I think gets confusing because there doesn't seem to be much flow.
And Universal, when I was there, there was a lot of construction going on with the Transformers ride being installed. There were just walls up everywhere.
Yeah.
So I had one big circle to go around there, too, just like Islands of Adventure.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's kind of try and wrap this up. And I know that we really haven't done justice to the Universal Parks because, you know, there's a lot there. And we're trying to give you just an hour or so of overview. But I'm going to ask each of you to maybe give one final thought in terms of one, bit of advice or suggestion you give to somebody who's interested in checking out Universal. And then maybe on the other side of that, you know, maybe one caution. So one positive thing to look forward to, maybe one caution. That makes some sense?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, Nate, I'll let you get us started and give people one caution that they should keep in mind when thinking about a Universal trip.
One caution. Know what you want to do when you step up to the ticket booth. If you're, you know, just visiting the park for a day, know what you want because they will try to upsell you.
Okay. Good point. Good point. Yeah. And they're keen to sell express passes if you're not staying on property. How about you, Philip? One caution or bit of advice to watch out for?
As far as positive advice, one thing I noticed that was, of course it was January, so it was a little, it wasn't as peak season, but at the beginning of the day, if you go and you say you have passes to both parks in one day, don't go directly to Wizarding World. Go to maybe Universal for a little while, and then around noon switch over, and that's when lower crowds are there. We did that this past time, and it worked wonderful for us.
Yeah, I would say be careful about that. If it's a lower park crowd time, you can get away with that. You can do that. When the parks are busier, you can still use a version of that strategy. I think you just need to wait a little longer and head back to the Wizarding World closer to, like 3:30 or 4. Because by then, that early morning crowd has cleared out, and you're right. I think that in some ways it gets easier to navigate in there in the late afternoon.
And another bit of cautionary. People who are going in October, Halloween Horror Nights is nothing like Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party. So don't mistake the two.
One's
a lot scarier.
Yes. Yeah. Halloween Horror Nights are not for children. Well, the one bit of advice I think that I would give is if you're going to do Universal, don't rush it. I think you can cover the two parks in 3 days. I wish we'd had a third day. But I think you can do the two parks in 3 days, but I would give it the 3 days. And I would strongly recommend choosing to stay on property. That free express pass, I'm telling you, when you figure out how much money you're saving with that free express pass, that by itself is going to cover one of the nights of the hotel easily. Mm-hmm. Because that express pass probably costs, they use variable pricing on the express pass depending on how busy a season it is. But even in low season, it runs about $35 per person. So if you've got a family of four with four express passes, if you were paying out of pocket, that's $140. You're not going to save that much money staying off property as opposed to on property. And the benefit of that Express Pass is well worth that expense, in my opinion.
Oh, I fully agree. And I mean, the fact that it's right there in walking distance is also, you know, invaluable. When we stayed at BLT, Bay Lake Tower last month, I feel like from the Royal Pacific Hotel to Islands of Adventure was about the same as Bay Lake to Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, that yeah.
Not a bad walk at all.
No, it really isn't. And it's not a bad walk from Hard Rock either. We took a boat once and then walked every time after that because, you know, by the time you waited for a boat and took the boat ride itself, it was nice and relaxing. We liked to come back on the boat, but going there, it was always faster to walk. Okay. And then one sort of parting note, it could be a good thing, could be a bad thing, something you want listeners to know about Universal, your parting shot. So Nate, what's your parting shot?
I had one day there. I could have probably spent the whole day at Wizarding World. So that particular section of Island of Adventure is worth the admission to the park.
All right.
That's my parting shot.
That's a good parting shot. how about you, Philip, your parting shot?
I would say, stop and check out some of the shows. They have some really wonderful stage shows, like Blues Brothers and Beetlejuice Graveyard Review. I mean, those are just, in my opinion, must-sees and make a well-rounded trip.
All right. And I think my parting shot, my last bit of advice is that there's a lot of new stuff going on at Universal right now, and it's worth checking it out and paying attention to what's coming. There's a new nighttime show there that is worth checking out. There are new attractions that are just opened. You know, they just opened the Despicable Me attraction. They're opening Transformers 3D this summer. They're working on expansion of Wizarding World. There's a lot going on there. And so before you take your trip, do a little homework and be ready. And then, you know, to echo what we've, I think, said quite a bit here at the end is don't rush it. Take your time. Give yourself an opportunity to really experience what's there. And it's not the dark side. It's a different kind of experience, but there are some terrific experiences that are available there. All right. Well, you know, you've heard what the three of us think about the Universal theme parks. We'd like to hear from you and hear about your experiences. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com, visit our blog, dizdads.com, tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter, or participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. Until next week, I've been Aaron Rittmaster with Philip Holt.
Goodbye.
And Nathan Trent.
Later, everybody.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.